Yeah, listening to the lyrics there, I haven't really thought about them in years. Command line's all I need for now. Command line's all you ever need. This is Pure Decking, show number 317 for Thursday. I don't know. I forgot what today is. Sometime in the summer. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and wondering how many times Glenn Beck rehearsed Boiling the Frog. I'm Morps. Tonight I have Are You? What amusing live streaming cooking are you doing today?
I'm thinking about clipping the
Ben Beck. His name is not Ben. We've renamed him.
Glenn. Glenn Beck boiling the frogs and just overlaying it in the background with turning the frogs gay. I think you do a whole thing. And I'm gonna call it the Keck Remix Challenge.
You're giving
There's
me
my
ideas
edges for the week,
dude. No, I've got some audio equipment coming. Now you're giving me ideas.
I know. I'm just thinking. Damn, I wish I had your audio equipment. Now that I've thought of that, that'd be great.
We'll talk after the show. I'm gonna end up with some spares. Madman, what are you drinking?
I am drinking Gotch. Monkey shoulder, which I just reached and grabbed off of my dresser because I realized I don't have a glass with booze in it. So I'm drinking straight scotch for the first time in a while. Usually I drink it over on the rocks, but the ice is too far away.
That really says something about you, Madman. The hard liquor is always within arm's reach.
And I am drinking...
I have a depressing life right now.
Well, at least he admits it. And just to wrap it up, I am drinking Dragon's Milk. So, for anybody who doesn't know, if you're part of today's Lucky 10,000, Glenn Beck boiled a frog on live TV.
Many moons ago, though.
Oh, a long time ago, back when he was still on
when
Fox.
When he was on Fox, yeah.
And just threw
it seems they don't jump out of boiling water. Who knew that they might, go into shock from being boiled, fall to the bottom of a pot, and die?
Forget about the frog. Forget about the frog.
He pulls it out of this nice, moist, cool, fucking little terrarium and then throws it in a boiling pot of water.
It's very obvious that he grabbed a live frog and threw it in a pot and killed it. I mean,
yeah.
That is great. That is a great man.
Huh. I thought sure they'd jump out.
Forget about the frogs.
And Alex Jones going over there going, Glenn Beck killing the gay frogs.
Hey, it's conversion therapy. That one failed.
Oh.
Hey. If he'd have converted back to being a straight frog, he'd have walked on boiling water and left.
Game over.
We're going with medieval. So we're no longer looking for witches. We're trying to do conversion therapy. It's the same method, boiling alive, tied to the stake, pressing. But now we're just trying to.
Madman's now the reptilian Mike Pence.
Madman and Mike Pence eating the rodents. Anyways. Oh.
Oh, fuck.
Yep. Okay. Speaking of Jones, yeah, it may or may not have been in the news because it's about all I've heard lately is apparently Alex Jones has been deplatformed.
Yeah.
Kicked off basically everything but Twitter.
Facebook and YouTube.
And
you have to be living
MailChimp?
Under a rock not to know.
Yeah. And apparently MailChimp, tons of the services he was on. Apparently he had an Instagram account and had never posted anything, but they banned him there too.
No shit.
I'm wondering if you have smaller social networks, it's Google Plus and Alex Jones never made an account here, but we made one for him and banned him. Well, no, it's YouTube, so he had Google Plus.
It wouldn't have surprised me.
I wonder if several of the smaller social networks that are up and coming tried to do that for press. It's like, yeah, we banned him too. Well, he never made an account on your platform. Yes, he did. See, the real Alex Jones. We registered it for him yesterday and then banned him.
Got a blue check mark and all.
Oh, fuck.
With that reference, I want to say Twitter's the one that didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
That's true.
Kudos to Twitter. Kudos to Twitter.
So,
they're copping flack for it.
The excuse is hate speech. They said apparently he said something that counts as hate speech in one of his shows. Although that's a question. If he said it on his show, well, YouTube, he flat out posted. I guess, well, no, you can post videos on Facebook too, can't you?
Yeah, he posts his shows on Facebook and YouTube. So even though it's going out terrestrially, which means it's meeting FCC guidelines, it's still being banned. Because he said something against the Muslims and the transsexuals, which I find hilarious. This dude says off-the-wall, crazy, libelous crap thousands of times a week. Like, the entire story, and I think 3 days he did on whether or not Michelle Obama was a dude. Pointing out, look at her arms. These are man's arms. There's an Adam's apple. I'm fairly certain she has a penis. And just finding any picture of her midsection where there was a wrinkle where a penis could have hidden. That did not get him banned.
And I'm pretty sure that was more than 15 minutes on that topic.
Oh, yeah, it was like an hour show on a She's a Dude.
Yeah.
And that's libelous. If he printed it, it's slanderous. He did not get banned for that.
So
what he got banned for was saying, if you're a dude, you're a dude. Cutting your dick off doesn't change that. And Muslims are blowing people up.
Okay. But so, I mean, you know, you can have your opinion on Alex Jones. So the point here is I don't actually – where I want to go with this is I don't care whether Alex Jones is – right, or you know what his politics are, or whether his conspiracy theories are true, or what was it you said the other day? If 10% of his theories are true, we're still royally fucked.
Oh yeah, and I hope it's the more hilarious ones. I hope chemtrails are both causing cancer, call signs from aliens, and glow in the dark, because that would be amazing as fuck. Terrible. I'm going to stay away from all flight zones, but. Wait,
so
aliens are coming.
Did you ever catch the 35 to 45 minutes of going through that Barack Obama's private security guards were actually shape-shifting lizards from the 12th dimension, I think it was?
No, but I did catch the Sandy Hook was a hoax.
But no, he actually had photographic evidence of one of these shifters being caught out in a crowd. It was fucking great.
Wait. He has Garou bodyguards. This is amazing.
Oh, it was just some of the most crazy, heinous shit you've ever fucking heard. And no one says anything about that.
Well, okay. So I'm going to get to the timing here in a minute. But first and foremost, do you think we're looking at a repeat of what happened with the Stormfront group? And I'm going to say no right up because he hasn't lost his domain names yet. But
I'm not going to go with domain names, but I think they're trying to set precedent on just pushing people out for hate speech. Because they went with somebody that nobody can truly defend much or everything that he says. Like, I'll defend some shows that are on his network, but not his show. Because I've seen his show. It's not news. It is a hilarious, entertaining evening drinking booze and just seeing what shit hits the fan. It's Jerry Springer of talk radio. And now that it's a video format, it's just Jerry Springer of the internet.
I mean, Howard Stern said fucking worse shit in his career.
Oh, sure.
And no one's ever pulled him.
So,
he was banned from terrestrial radio.
So, do you think we're going to see more of this until social media actually ends up regulated? Because, I mean, okay, if you're starting off with, like, the Stormfront group, then you move on to Alex Jones. I mean, are you kind of, like, turning the heat up? You know, starting to go, okay, we'll start with the really egregious stuff, and then we just start moving into politics we don't like? Because, Jones was nuts, but you're right. A lot of the other stuff on his networks wasn't quite as out there.
No, I think they pretty much, it was a Streisand effect in the last 48 hours. I think Jones's traffic is just through the roof right now.
Oh, sure. He's making bank off of it right now.
Well, yeah, but why coming home going, who's Alex Jones? And I'm having to explain it. Like, it's actually making it into Normie Town.
That's when you're in for a treat. Let me play you the Frogs.
That's what I said. Oh, come sit down with me. And I just put on the Gay Frog song. And I went, that's Alex.
Well, you remember Bald did the same damn thing. He said, who the hell is Alex Jones? And it's like, exactly. We all were just like, oh, my friend.
And InfoWars, he actually hosts his own site where he's been posting his videos for years.
Oh, sure.
So you can still find him. Yeah. And they can't kick him off of his own domain.
Yes, they can.
I'd love to see InfoWars traffic in the last 48 hours.
Oh, I'm sure it's up.
Do you think somebody's just not going to let him re-register his domain?
That's what they did to Stormfront.
The Stormfront, yeah. I can't see. If they do it again, it depends who they're going to do it to. You've got everybody standing up going, look, I'm not a big fan of Alex Jones, but this shouldn't have happened to him.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Well, especially because all of these websites did it within like 24 hours, something like that.
People that have current feuds with Jones are saying, bring him back. We can still make fun of him, but you did him wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you've got some of his biggest adversaries going, look, you can't do that to him. Yeah, he's a bit of a dick. And yeah, we're having a war right now, but I'd rather him in the same space as me where I can see him.
Well, you can't win the argument against one guy if he's gagged. I mean,
yeah, it's unfair to attack the man.
But I don't think we need other regulation. There's already a regulation on the books for this.
Okay.
Facebook and YouTube have ceased being platforms. They're now publishers. Treat them as publishers.
Because they did editorial. I could see that.
I think if you're ever going to have this conversation outside and you're sort of talking to someone who might be like, I think it's a good thing Alex got banned, I think the best way to talk about it is that they are now, they're an arbiter of news. They are making editorial changes.
Well, Facebook started doing that the moment they started trying to label what was fake news and what wasn't.
Well,
yeah.
Now that they're doing that and they've taken this step, they're now a publisher. They'll decide that was a dumb idea within 5 minutes of Congress actually saying they're a publisher.
Yeah.
Well, when you've got Congress people actively calling for further censorship, that is what worries me further after the Alex Jones censoring. Because then you had talking heads coming out saying, well, maybe we need to shut down Facebook for at least until the primaries are over. That way, nobody can Russian bots.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. Is Alex Jones going to get all of his accounts back after the election? Because the midterms are coming up.
If they walk it back and give Jones his account back, that's it. Wild West is on. I can't. It is. You think about it. If they have to walk it back and let him come back on, it's Wild West. You can say anything you want now.
Oh, yeah. If they get switched over to being a publisher, they're going to want the Wild West back, because I've seen 4 copyrighted things on YouTube that I was just looking for, shows that I wanted to see. Right now, YouTube can't be sued for that. But if they're listed as a publisher,
totally can be.
Every time anyone posts, I don't know, an episode of the 90s X-Men cartoon, that person's not going to get sued, because that person's not Google. They don't have billions of dollars. Google is going to get sued for
Didn't Google and Viacom already do a settlement a couple of years ago?
Probably.
I think they did.
But I think that'll be the quick and easy way of fixing this whole censorship thing. It's like, okay, do you want to be a censor? You're completely fine to do that. You are a private company. We have no right to tell you who can and cannot be on your platform. Just realize, you're editing your platform. You're no longer a public space. You are a publisher. We are going to treat you as a publisher. Problem solved.
Yeah. And I think another big step needs to go with it, too. It needs to be a public shift and a large glass for everybody of harden the fuck up. Just because you don't like it don't watch it. You know what I mean? That's, at the end of the day, as an individual who makes individual choices, the onus falls back on you. If you're watching it and getting offended, just remember, you clicked on it. This isn't broadcast TV anymore where you're sitting on the couch fucking eating bonbons, just having whatever shit's directed to you next.
I tend not to eat bonbons on the couch. They get in the cushions.
I was trying to make a Bundy reference, right? It's, you're not being spoon-fed this anymore. This is your active choice. You are choosing to use Facebook, YouTube. Like, I haven't watched Alex Jones stuff in years, but I know who he is. Am I offended that he's out there saying Michelle Obama has a penis? No.
I thought it was hilarious. Untrue as hell, but hilarious.
Yeah, I think she has a penis as well, but that's just my opinion.
Well, and you know, even more to the point, you chose, you're right. You didn't, it's not just being broadcast. You chose not only to click the link, you chose to be on the platform in the first place. You know, nobody's saying you have to go out and watch YouTube. There are other video sites. Not as many as there used to be, but there are other video sites. And nobody's saying you have to be on Facebook. Hell, I'm not.
You can turn off autoplay. So you're not getting spoon-fed the next video after the next video after the next video. And the idea that nobody will come along and do another YouTube is bullshit, because there were people before YouTube came along. YouTube did it better. And let's face it, YouTube's marketability came from, hey, we're going to allow everything on here. And everyone went, this is awesome.
Well, YouTube's not, certainly
not being spoon-fed.
YouTube certainly wasn't the first video sharing site to pop up, but they did kind of have the timing of technology coming out, because YouTube did not develop the technology their site ran on. They used Micromedia Flash.
Yeah.
So they just happened to get kind of lucky on the timing of the technology getting to the point where you could actually do a site like a YouTube. But Facebook...
And they had the backing and the server racks and everything ready to go.
Well, yeah. But Facebook, on the other hand, is not the first, well, let's be honest, forum to come along. Because before Facebook, it was MySpace. And before MySpace, it was LiveJournal. And before LiveJournal, it was fucking GeoCities.
Yep, and Google wasn't the first search algorithm. Like, it just...
AltaVista, Dogpile, Yahoo.
Yeah, I remember when Yahoo was the big one.
So,
Skype. Skype's not the only messenger. There was ICQ before that. There's millions and millions. It's just with the main... Because... The internet went mainstream at the same time that these things sort of became, and phones became accessible to the internet with the smartphone, and it just sort of grew on the back of that. And we've got to this point now where everybody's so used to these four main sites, they don't realize how big and vast the internet is. You can go elsewhere.
Real.video. If you want to catch Alex Jones, he's not on YouTube, but he is on Real.video.
BitChute, that's a new video platform. Hell, we went through the Asian platforms, 3-4 shows ago?
Yeah, there you go.
Vimeo, a little slow on my end, but might work better in other countries.
No, Vimeo is slow.
Okay.
They've tried to do a very different take on a video streaming site, because they default to a higher quality video stream, and their interface is kind of janky. So yeah, they are definitely slower. You're not imagining that.
Okay. These guys won't be the last. They just seem to be at the forefront right now. But if they go ahead and start banning people like Alex Jones, I just can't think who they'd jump to next.
Crowder would be an easy target, especially after, you know, he jumped behind the counter of that one guy.
I think if they do anyone, they'll do Crowder next, and that'll be the death of YouTube. Don't think they realize how strong Crowder is.
Well, they'll do Crowder, but then they'll probably also try to pick some people on other political viewpoints, so you'll probably start seeing, because I mean, this happened with all the ad stuff, you know, last year too, where it wasn't just one political party that got hit. it was actually a whole group of videos of anybody even talking about certain things got hit. And so, you know, you had a lot of people complaining that, you know, they were arguing positive things for these topics, but because they even talked about the topic or because they talked about news about the topic, they got their channel banned.
Dude, so there is a, I don't know, I'm not a YouTuber, but I understand there is a rumor going around the YouTubers that they just put out a new policies guideline out on YouTube, where they're going to start cracking down on fair notice a bit more. And they think, and these people are roughly in the know, that they'll be going after people that do videos about other people's videos. So if...
Oh, fair use. Guy like,
yeah, fair use. Sorry,
okay, okay.
Fuck it up. What it'll be is if you as, say, who's one of these YouTubers that does this? Say Bearing.
Yeah, right? He does.
That cunt's a cunt. Say he starts commenting on an ABC network show, like the news that they've just put out.
Mm-hmm.
If he's, well, I think that narrative's false and here's why. They'll ban him because you can't second guess a mainstream news thing. And they're going to ban you under fair use. It's no longer fair use. So I... Better people than me can explain it if anyone's following. But we'll know more in a couple of days.
Well, you mean they're going to be less pervasive about what counts as fair use?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the worrying thing right now. But once again, their guidelines are super sketchy and open to interpretation.
Well, I think that's the point. The looser they can write them, the more they can just do whatever the fuck they want.
The bigger the guideline, the less a guideline it is, and more of a, I don't like you today.
But I think they've got to walk a very fine line. If they are going to start doing it, I think they're going to see their platform drop off quite significantly. Because people just go, why bother?
You know, we all think that. I don't know that that would happen.
There needs to be a replacement for it to drop off.
Because, like, Facebook has really royally fucked up lately, and they've been accused of censorship for a while, and now they've had all this data breach stuff. And a lot of people have left their platform, but they still at least are claiming huge numbers of users.
And what's the take-up rate of those platforms now? I'd say it's they're probably hemorrhaging more users than they're getting.
Could be. I don't know.
They might not have growth, but they still have a sustainable user base.
Yeah.
There's kind of tiers of users when it comes to Facebook, YouTube, or anything. There's the casual user that will just give it up if they piss them off. And then there's a user that will give it up if there's an alternative. And then there's diehard fanboys. But if there's not an alternative, they might not be pissing you off, but if there's something you can still do, you might stick around. Like, I might not like YouTube's bans on certain political shows, but I can still stream music.
Well, that's what
I'm still a YouTube user.
That's what I was getting ready to say, is the alternative has to exist, and in these cases, the content you want needs to be on that alternative. So, you know, if there's somebody you're following on YouTube and they don't post it anywhere else, and you want to watch that person more than you're pissed off about YouTube, you're going to go on YouTube and watch them. So
yeah, I see what you're saying, but the way that, you know, the new platforms are seeing a market.
Yeah.
They're starting to seep in. They're not going to be huge overnight, but the more and more people that get locked out of YouTube, then move over to their platform, is going to diminish very quickly.
I agree with that.
Need to lock out. You could post on multiple platforms. You don't have to be exclusively YouTube. So if some of these content providers start posting on, I don't know, Vimeo, Reel.video,
Pornhub,
then
Pornhub
actually is hosting gun videos. I finally found three that didn't have naked boobs. I was sad. But I found them. So, yeah, they are hosting straight-up gun videos.
Yeah, I go to Pornhub
when I want to
watch Minecraft Let's Play.
Found a non-porn Let's Play of Minecraft on Pornhub. The reason I was searching, we did a story that things were migrating to Pornhub because they had the server space and didn't edit.
Yeah, they weren't kicking people off for, you know, being right-wing.
Like, I have to find stuff on Pornhub that's not porn. You'd be surprised how refined you have to get your search to pull up not porn of something. I mean, it is a porn site, so I guess you shouldn't be that surprised, but you have to pretty refine your search.
There is a subset of individuals out there who like to go to Pornhub, watch the videos, and just leave angry comments critiquing the scenes. Like that, and it's an unironic thing.
It's like, I don't understand this video. She didn't even take her clothes off. What the fuck, man?
Like, no, there's makeup critiques on the women and like how shitty tattoo design. As a tattooist of, you know, 23 years, I could tattoo my way around this girl anytime because that tattoo's shit. You know, come to my tattoo parlor and get a better one. Those are
people so bored with pornography. They are no longer paying attention to the pornography part of the pornography.
Yeah, the critiquing, like, the scenes and stuff like that. I would have done much better dialogue. Things like that.
Yes, because you watch porn for the plot. Absolutely.
That's what I mean. There is a subsection of people who have just consumed so much porn now that they're leaving angry shit at the bottom in the comment section.
Oh, my crap. What if we get desensitized enough to porn that Pornhub becomes the YouTube replacement?
Well, that'd be hilarious. Look at Idiocracy, big ass fries. Come to buttfuckers. it could end up that way.
Well, no, I mean, that is not a documentary. I know we make the joke, but that is not a fucking documentary.
Well, we're getting there because we're now talking about people using. Leaving unironic fucking comments on porn, critiquing it, and getting quite angry sometimes.
Well, I mean, you know, go away baiting is no longer even a comedic statement. It's just like, oh, that's just a college dorm room. I mean, fuck.
Yeah. It's a fact of statement.
So.
Statement of fact. Yeah. Yeah, everything backwards today. I must be upside down.
Or we are. Somebody is. Anyways.
Somebody is.
Let's get into the news articles here. First one up is from technologyreview.com, and it's part of the Black. It's a comment on some of the events going on at Black Hat. Thousands of cybersecurity professionals gathering at Black Hat, a massive conference held in the blistering heat of Las Vegas every summer, are encountering a different type of session this year. A new community track is offering talks on a range of workplace issues facing defenders battling to protect the world from a hacking onslaught. With titles like Mental Health Hacks Fighting Burnout, Depression, and Suicide in the Hacker Community, and Holding On for Tonight, Addiction and InfoSec, several of these sessions will address pressures on security teams and the negative impact these can have on workers' well-being. A lot of people in the space feel strongly about wanting to protect their users, says Jamie Tosmello of Duo Security, who is one of the speakers. Where this becomes challenging is when people are under sustained high stress. That increases the risk of depression and mental illness. The impact on cyber defenders' lives is deeply concerning, as there are broader implications for security. In spite of a push for greater automation, many tasks in cyber defense are still labor-intensive. Yes. Yes, they are. My random Python scripts folder would attest to this. workers experiencing mental health issues are more likely to make mistakes and have performance issues that require colleagues to pick up the slack, and increasing the likelihood that they will make errors too. This matters even more than ever. The stakes have risen dramatically in the cybersecurity world. Hackers aren't just swiping credit card details and digital health records. They're attacking systems governing power grids, manufacturing facilities, and other sensitive infrastructure. For sure, workplace stress isn't unique to cybersecurity. There are plenty of other workers, including first responders, soldiers, and surgeons, who face intense pressure in their jobs. Other IT roles, such as the ones involved in keeping key networks and databases up and running, can also be stressful. But industry insiders say several factors have combined to create a particular problem in cybersecurity. One is the fact that IT systems of all kinds are now pretty much constantly under attack, which means there's no obvious finish line to the work. There's never a downtime. It's nonstop, and every day is a battle, says Andrea Little-Labago, an executive at cybersecurity firm Endgame, who has written about the subject of stress in the cyber workplace. The speed at which the bad guys are innovating also creates unique pressures. The challenges to keep up are insane, says Jack Daniel, the co-founder of B-Sides, another information security conference that has highlighted mental health issues. To make matters worse, the industry is facing a shortage of skilled workers. According to one estimate, more than 300,000 cybersecurity positions in the U.S. alone remain vacant. That means additional work and pressure for those covering unfilled roles. A global survey of 343 cybersecurity executives published in November of 2017 by Enterprise Strategy Group and the Information Systems Security Association found that almost 40% of them said that the skill shortage was causing high rates of burnout and staff turnover. There really is an urgent need for more serious research on this issue, says Daniel. Just getting a baseline from which to measure stress levels in the cyber workforce would be helpful. Two researchers at America's National Security Agency, Celeste Lynn Paul and Josiah Dysterra, there's a K in there that really shouldn't be there, have conducted international studies at the organization whose staff often find themselves in stressful situations. They have developed a stress survey that can be used for a one-off study or as an ongoing benchmark. The researchers will be discussing this at Black Hat and say they plan to put it online August 13th so anyone can access it. While more empirical evidence would be welcome, companies can already take steps to address stress-related issues by ensuring cyber defenders have regular time off. That'd be nice. Are encouraged to share any concerns they have over workplace pressure with managers. My manager is under as much stress as I am. And given access to sources of advice and counseling on mental health. Yeah, talk to a shrink. Fuck off. Technology could ultimately help improve matters, too. Hordes of cybersecurity software vendors are embracing machine learning tools as a way to, if you knew how machine learning actually worked, you wouldn't think this would help, as a way to automate more and more tasks. It could eventually take some of the strain off of worked employees. But before that happens at scale, many more humans are going to be needed in the front of the cybersecurity line. So, I can back up some of what this says in the article from my own experiences, and their solutions are not anywhere near.
Well, I think you get lucky in one aspect, then, Warp, so you can come back from work at the end of the day, pour yourself some Woodford's Reserve, and just spew your guts out to us.
I often do.
Yeah, you've got a good peer support network around you that allows you just to unload the fucking day when you have to.
I have unloaded fear on you guys in the past quite a bit.
You know, without fear of retribution or being accused of anything. You know what I mean? I think a lot of security guys, because it is such a specialized area, and you know, most of the time you're explaining what you're doing very detailed to us, but if you're a less shy, say you're more shy or you don't have that group of individuals around you to let go once every now and then, and you're going to be carrying that shit with you internally.
Oh, yeah, it builds up.
No one. Yeah.
And I'm sure Yeah. And I was going to say, I'm sure this applies to other stressful stuff. I'm just saying, I know from cybersecurity, I mean, for fuck's sake, it really does never stop.
I don't think it's the never stop issue which is the biggest problem, because there's a lot of jobs that are unending. The big problem I've heard from you and almost everyone else I know in cybersecurity, there's a never-ending pool of patients for doctors. But when a doctor says, this needs to happen or bad shit's going to happen, people take them seriously. Whenever IT says, we need to fix this problem, or shit's hitting the fan, it might not get fixed until shit hits the fan. And if you're a perfectionist or someone that actually cares about their job, you're seeing all these problems that are fixable. It might cost some money or do some delays, but are fixable, that aren't being fixed because management is saying, it's not a problem, and then it shows up to be a problem. That's, I think, a big source of stress, because if I'm seeing shit that needs to be fixed and no one's taking it seriously, if I cared about my job, that would stress me out.
Well, that's actually not part of the part that's that really, really drives it in. The part that really twists the knife is when you have management that says, no, not only is that not a problem, our security people are wrong for bringing that up. So, you know, they could start questioning your integrity because you've brought up something that's inconvenient and they don't want to drop everything for 6 months to fix it.
Yeah, I think that's valid. But
yeah.
I mean, if you are in these jobs and it is getting to you, it's got to be rough. And I mean, maybe there needs to be... There needs to be a solution that's rather than you just fix it yourself, you're an IT guy and you're feeling upset, you know, go to talk to a shrink. There's got to be a better way of doing it.
Well, I imagine this problem is larger than just IT security or IT admin or IT. This problem is, I mean, we've talked about similar problems with police. We've talked about similar problems with healthcare. Other people have talked way more about similar problems with healthcare and police. You know, are you with what you used to do? You used to talk about the stresses that you dealt with a lot and just some of the absolute madness you had to put up with.
And you know what? I reckon I would have been driven to even worse alcoholism if you guys weren't around to blow steam off.
Like, yeah.
How many times did I come to the mic with, Jesus, man, do you know what I had to put up with today? It was so much shit and blood.
Yeah.
It was more the normals than the people you would think would be the stressful ones.
Yeah, I do remember him saying that. It was always the... It's like, no, the problem was the administration, not the tards.
Yeah. I mean, towards the end, yes. But I think this is not just an IT problem. It's a more... I don't want to say a valid job problem. Every job has its stresses, but responsibility position. Like, I don't know if I was, you know, piling a wall and I had a bad day, I was feeling stressed out back then. You know, leaving a wall half done overnight, it's not going to be a big deal. But I imagine leaving a network open to the internet just because I just didn't feel like getting around to it. Probably a must do. Can't just leave it and go home for the day.
I don't know. That might actually make some people happy.
It depends. It depends, right? Because the problem I deal with is other people in IT saying, no, leaving the network half done is good enough.
Yeah.
So that's a problem.
I think just having the talk about, well, you're going to be addicted to this and alcoholism and all, it's not solving the problem. They fucking know they're drunks. You know, they know they're addicted to Adderall or whatever. It's keeping them fucking going. How do you leverage the stress off it? And so you just go for a run. That doesn't work. It might work for one or two, but...
Well, I mean, you got to find your own thing to unwind with, right? Because that is going to be different
exactly
for everybody. But...
And you know what? The fallout is just generally booze, man.
It has been for me.
The quicker they legalize weed... You know, so you're not having, well, you're not having the adverse effects. I mean, you know, having a skin full of booze and then, you know, going to work the next day still hungover, probably not a good idea for productivity, let alone driving. You may still be under the influence. You know, either smoke some weed of an evening to unwind, you know, a couple of beers, done. You're going to wake up fresh.
But
I don't know. I'm thinking the whole, you're right, with unwinding with community. That would probably be the better source of stress relief.
Yeah, I think so too, Madman, but not everybody in those positions are going to have the community. And some of them are going to come home to the stresses of wife, child, bills.
Yeah.
On top of that.
I was just thinking, when I was going through the stress of middle management in a job I hated, Vampire and D&D were really good stress relievers.
Well, I think part of the problem is, too, okay, my security department's understaffed by half right now.
Yeah.
And that's an ongoing problem. We've been reorging, would be a good way to put it, at work. And we started looking at how things are broken down on my team. And my boss brought me in to confirm what everybody on the team's been doing. So I'm sitting there looking at it, and you know, one person, their list on the presentation is, you know, about 8 items long. The next person's their list also about 8 items long. third person, the guy who's out on leave, his list's about, you know, maybe 10 items long. And then, you know, probably one of the more senior people I have, you know, their list is about, you know, 14 items long. And then she pulls up my list, and it's like 45. And it's like, that can't be right. What the fuck?
Are these some things you can delegate to other members of the security team, or are you actually the only one qualified to do them?
It's a mix. Many of them, yeah. I'm the only one with any real ability to code on my team right now. Now, I'm working on fixing that, but I'm having to do a lot of teaching and a lot of training, because that's the other problem is, you know, they talked about it in this article that there's this shortage of security people. So I can't even hire for skill set. I have to look for attitude and ability to learn, because I'm going to have to teach them. So, you know, I've been teaching teams basically for a year and a half now, and on top of my regular duties, which keeping up sucks. So, I mean, it's just, it builds and it builds. And right now with all the shit going down, you know, I find out I'm not going to get to roll over any of my vacation time this year. I have to use it all or I'll lose it. Okay, great. When can I use it? Well, not right now. It's like, well, when do you think I'll be able to use it? Yeah, we'll get back to you on that. So,
is it that conference happened yet, Mops? Or is this just it's upcoming
going,
talks?
It's going on right now.
Okay,
I think the article is a couple of days old, but
I'm gonna have to get a link to those.
That's why we're short one person. Remember?
Yeah, that's where he is.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'll have to check out that.
All right.
Oh, for any of our regular listeners, if you can point out syntax, we'll mail you a T-shirt that I've probably not worn.
Bullshit. We know he's worn it. He's going to mail you an old Kroger's polo. Or did you get rid of those?
Oh, God, no. What if I ever want to troll somebody? I actually came across a tag that says support manager. Walk around some place I don't work at anymore.
I
help you? No, I'm about to throw your ass out.
Oh, I wish. Do we keep? I wish I kept all those goofy name badges I came up with too. So, anyways, next article is from TechCrunch. The FCC has come clean on the fact that a purported hack of its comment system last year never actually took place, after a report from its inspector general found a lack of evidence supporting the idea. Chairman Ajit Pai blamed the former chief information officer and the Obama administration for providing inaccurate information about this incident to me, my office, Congress, and the American people. The Obama administration wasn't... Didn't that vote happen right after Trump got into office? On the net neutrality stuff?
The vote may have happened, but you have to put up the regulations for comments a couple months before the vote.
But I'm just thinking he's blaming. Maybe he's not. I'm trying to remember when all this happened. Maybe it was Obama. I don't care either way. I still think it's a bullshit answer. The semi-apology and finger-pointing are a disappointing conclusion to the year... Well, of course it's disappointing to you guys. He's blaming Obama. Are a disappointing conclusion to the year-long web of obfuscation that the FCC has woven. Since the moment it was first reported that there was a hack of the system, there have been questions about the nature, scale, and response to it that the FCC has studiously avoided, even under direct congressional questioning. It was so galling to everybody looking for answers that the GAO was officially asked to look into it. The letter requesting the office's help at the time complained that the FCC had not released any records or documentation that would allow for confirmation of an attack that an attack occurred, that it was effectively dealt with, and that the FCC had begun to institute measures to thwart future attacks and ensure the security of its systems. That investigation is still going on, but one conducted by the FCC's own OIG resulted in the report Pi cites. The former CIO, David Bray, was the origin of the theory, but emails obtained by an American oversight in June show that evidence for it and a similar claim in 2014 were worryingly thin. So I guess there was one during Obama's presidency. Nevertheless, the FCC has continually upheld the idea that it was under attack and never publicly walked it back. Pye's statement was issued before the OIG publicized its report, as one does with the report is imminent, that essentially says your agency has been clueless at best and deliberately untruthful at worst for more than a year. To be clear, the report is still unpublished, though its broader conclusions are clear from Pye's statement. In it, he slathers Bray for the partisan brush and asserts that the report exonerates his office. The statement is, I am deeply disappointed with that the FCC's former CIO, who was hired by the prior administration and is no longer with the commission, provided inaccurate information about this incident to me, my office, Congress, and the American people. Does this sound like anything like the management blaming the IT guy to anybody else?
Yes. It's Lee's poor whipping boy.
Yeah, this
except it's kind of coming back that you can't blame the IT guy because nothing actually happened.
This is completely unacceptable. I'm also disappointed that some working under the former CIO apparently either disagreed with the information that he was presenting or had questions about it, yet didn't feel comfortable communicating their concerns to me or my office. Well, they were scared of your teeth, man. On the other hand, I am pleased that this report debunks the conspiracy theory that my office or I had any knowledge of the information provided by the former CIO was inaccurate and that allowed and that was allowing the inaccurate information to be disseminated for political purposes. Although an evaluation of Pye's conspiracy theory idea must wait till the report is public, it's hard to square this displeasure of the chairman's with the record. That's a weird way to write that. At any time in the last year, especially after Bray had departed, it would have been if not simple, then at least simpler than maintaining its complex act of knowledgelessness to say that the CIO had made an error and that there was no attack. Nothing like that has come out of the agency. One must assume the agency had reviewed the data. Bray left a long time ago. Why did the subordinates fail to speak out afterwards? If the FCC had its doubts, why did it not say so instead of risking withering criticism by avoiding the question for months on end? When and why did Pye or his office develop the idea that the report was accurate, and if not when it was being disseminated? These are not trivial questions. So the article goes on, but it's just more of the same. So, yeah, I mean, the truth of this stuff is probably going to eventually come out. But at just the fact that he's turning around and saying, well, the IT guys just were wrong. They were wrong about that. Why would the IT guys give a fuck one way or the other? They don't. Well, that's not true. Usually the leadership in IT gets as much political pressure as any other leadership in a business. So if the chairman's coming down on him saying, I need an excuse, make it look like we were hacked or something.
You know. I mean, you want to make it look like I didn't do my job? But I did do my job.
But you're fired if you don't make it look like you didn't do your job.
So
looking at your performance review here of the year, it looks like you did your job that didn't do your job well enough so you could do your job. Now I look back.
I've been in that situation where I was told I needed to not keep, not to write as detailed reports because it made them look bad when they didn't respond to them. It wasn't quite phrased that way, but that's essentially what they were saying. And I'm fairly certain a operations manager was fired because he did what he was told and got caught.
It just looks they had some bad press. They needed an excuse. They tried to throw Buddy under the bus. It worked, but now under a new administration, Buddy's going like, but we didn't get hacked.
It's like, by the way.
Yeah, just saying.
Yeah, all that evidence, yeah, it doesn't exist. So, next article is from the Torrent Freak, and it's fairly standard fare, but I thought it was at least interesting to talk about. New court documents suggest that the BBC has yet to find the source of the leaked Doctor Who footage that had previously appeared online. The British company is hoping that Microsoft can help. Yeah, they're not hoping that Microsoft can help. They're going to use the court system to try to force Microsoft to help. At a federal court in Washington, the BBC requested a DMCA subpoena targeted at a OneDrive user who shared the infringing material online late June. Doctor Who fans all around the world are looking forward to an upcoming season, which will be the first to have a female lead. While the debut is still a few months away, leaked footage of the first episode recently started to appear. A short, unfinished clip of the new season surfaced in several places. This frustrated some fans who preferred not to see any spoilers, as well as the BBC, which didn't want unapproved teasers of their hit show being circulated online. In an effort to track down the source of the leak, the BBC has taken the matter to the U.S. courts. Last month, it obtained a DMCA subpoena from a California federal court ordering the forum tool Tapatalk to identify the source of an infringing post. Whether this resulted in any useful information is unknown, but a few days ago it became clear that the BBC is still investigating the matter. In a separate effort, BBC Studios had filed a request for a DMCA subpoena at the federal court in Washington. This time it's directed at Microsoft. According to the BBC, a user of Microsoft's OneDrive stored and shared a copy of the leaked file titled img_i5563.trim.mov. And because I'm curious, I'm just going to copy that file name and copy. I'm going to go over here to one of the tools we talked about in Dojo before, File Chef. We're just going to punch that file name in for video. We're going to search. Nothing. That's a shame. Let's take .mov off there. Nope, still nothing. Yeah, well, shoot. I was just kind of hoping a copy of that was just going to pop up and be like, yep, there it is. But obviously not. The infringing material includes, without limitation, an unauthorized copy of the copyrighted video content from Season 11, Episode 1 of Doctor Who, for which BBC Worldwide Limited, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, they're really taking this leaked couple seconds of footage pretty damn seriously, and they're starting to do DMCA subpoenas against Tapatalk and Microsoft. That's interesting to go to that level. I mean, yeah, Microsoft runs OneDrive, but Tapatalk is forum software. That's like, they're not running that forum. They're just providing software to help run that forum, you know? It's like suing Apple because somebody used a Mac or an iPhone to pirate a movie.
Personally, not much of a Whovian, but I recall I've seen a chick as a main character in every season of Doctor Who that I've watched.
Yeah, it's the
Are they
companion,
just saying this is the first time that they were a doctor?
Yeah, I think they're making it. I think the doctor is going to be a chick in the new one.
Okay. Because the companions are main characters. Just want to point that out.
Yeah, it's awfully sexist of the BBC there, isn't it?
Yeah. They've had chicks as main characters since the beginning.
They've torn it down everywhere, man. Everywhere it's going up.
Maybe it's not going to be that good, and they really want to control the messaging before it comes out.
I don't know, but that trim.mov is a movie editing program.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, why can't I do anything with these numbers?
Because it's a generic name.
Dude, I've got to find this file now. It's not because I like Doctor Who. It's because it's a challenge.
I'm going to pirate this, not because I want to watch it, but because you're making it difficult.
They don't want me to see something. Why?
All right.
Oh. I don't want you to see Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
You should never
watch that.
Is it a bad film?
Oh my god.
No, I just don't want you to watch it. You should never watch that.
It is a terrible movie.
But that's not the reason I don't want you to watch it.
It's one of the first movies ever made entirely on green screen. And it looks it.
Oh.
And they've actually got some named actors in it, too, like Angelina Jolie's in it.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, you're sitting there looking at this going, I mean, the whole time it's just people standing in front of a green screen. And
like, it's going to get better.
It never does. We watched that whole movie waiting for it to start. It never did. It's like, where's the joke? When are they going to burst through this? So it's sort of like Team America World Police if the entire movie had been the miniature puppets that the other puppets were controlling at the beginning.
I was going to go with it. It would have been like Team America World Police if everything was that strange, awkward sex scene.
Well, why don't we talk about the artificially grown pig's lung?
Yeah, let's go down that road.
Let's move along here.
Yeah, so RU sent me this article. It's from the BBC. Scientists have successfully transplanted a bioengineered lung into a pig. To create a new lung, experts used a scaffold that provided structural support and slowly built up the lung tissue around it, using cells from the pig that was due to get the transplant. This was done to prevent the lung from being rejected by the pig's immune system. Once transplanted, the lung alveolar tissue and blood vessels carried on developing for up to 2 months. Not only was the lung not rejected, it even developed an important population of bacteria. Lungs suitable for transplant are in short supply, and the study is a significant step towards finding an alternative solution. People wait a long time for a transplant list before they are able to receive a donated lung, said co-author Professor John Nichols. The transplantation of bioengineered lungs has been tried before in small animals, but these efforts have met with failure. There were problems with the blood vessels, and the animals suffered from the accumulation of fluid known as edema. We were able to make a much better developed vasculature in the lungs and transplant into a larger animal with a larger lung, said co-author Professor Jacqueline Cortiella of the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, U.S. Investigators used a cocktail of sugar and detergent to get rid of all the cells and blood vessels from a lung taken from a donor pig. This left behind a support scaffold made of proteins, the lung's skeleton, if you like. Then they regenerated the lung over 30 days in a piece of equipment called a bioreactor. And the pictures of this thing are just... They look like a they look like something a steampunk cosplayer would come up with in their basement. I mean, it's pretty wild.
It's pretty much just a couple of mason jars, some tubing, and a bit of copper wire, and there we go.
And a plexiglass plate they like bolted on the front of it. The bioreactor is a machine that supports the development of biological tissue. If the recipient's animal cells are used, it reduces the likelihood that the pig's immune system will reject a transplanted organ because it recognizes the tissue as its own. The key to the UTMB team's success in getting the lung's blood vessel development started in the bioreactor was supplying stem cells, the body's master cells, that are able to subsequently develop into different tissue types, but also growth factors, a molecule that stimulates cell growth, proliferation, or differentiation of the cells into different types. After transplantation, they used CT, or computed tomography, and MRI scanning and measurement of gene expression to check that the lung tissue and vessel growth was continuing. They didn't need to keep adding growth factors to make this growth happen. Professor John Hunt from Nottingham Trent University said the bioengineered lung facilitates the development of a blood supply and provides for the establishment of natural lung microbial flora. Importantly, the transplanted lung wasn't rejected, and at the end of the 2-month study, after the transplant, the pig's blood remained fully saturated with oxygen, although one thing we couldn't really evaluate was how much of the bioengineered lung provided oxygenation to the animal, said Professor Nichols. The lungs weren't really mature enough at the end of 2 months. The technique has been successful in 4 pigs so far. Given the complexity of the model, the authors should be congratulated on their approach and success to date, says Professor Hunt. So... bottom of the article, they think they're 5 to 10 years away from actually doing this in humans.
Damn.
So they need.
I was thinking up.
Go ahead.
I was thinking after I found that story, and it sucks, man. I'm too old for that tech to help me.
No, you're not. What's really sad, that story isn't quite as up to date as it should be with it being a recent story. They've been growing those lungs, according to Nova, for about a decade. This is just the first time they've put it in something other than just having it breathe in a jar. The problem isn't growing lungs or even growing human lungs, because we've grown a human lung. The problem is we can't create the scaffolding that they used. So in order to make a lung, we have to have lungs from something that's dead in order to pretty much... wipe a cocktail swab of cells onto it and let it grow.
Yeah, that's so, why they were talking about scrubbing down that protein scaffolding from an existing lung.
Yeah.
So,
I guess we could start saving them from slaughterhouses if any pig would work and start making human lungs.
Well, that's the question.
We can't make it completely from scratch yet.
No.
Well, I mean, you don't necessarily need pig lung either. This means that you could make a successful donor lung from any human lung. So,
yeah,
you know,
you wouldn't have the chance of rejection.
Just grab an organ donor's lungs and throw them through the same process. It doesn't matter if they're a blood type match or whatever, from what this article sounds like.
Yeah, because you're killing everything except for the scaffolding itself.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder, would this work? You say, I get hit by a car tomorrow and died. Would my lungs still be viable as transplant using this technique?
Depends on where the car hit you.
No, I mean, like, for the decades of smoking and
oh, God, yeah. I have no idea.
The soft tissue isn't what they're using. So everything that the smoking's damaged, they're killing off with that cocktail.
That's what I'm saying.
And there's, like, an outer membrane of a lung that also has the imprints of the blood vessels that were supplying the lung. That's what they're keeping.
They're stripping out, I think it's the alveoli. Is that what they call the little things that oxygenate?
Oh, I don't remember. Oh,
I can't remember. It's been a long time since I did any anatomy. I think they called alveoli or something like that. Oh, I don't know, but because that's the part that gets damaged from a smoker. They must be cleaning all that away, and that must all regrow. That's all I'm thinking.
Well, yeah. They said that they grabbed
it's
the lung.
It's fucking amazing.
The lung that they started with from a different pig. They said it was from a donor pig.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the donor pig wasn't a, you know, three-decade smoker. That would be my question the dudes doing this.
Here's another question, though. So how many months did it take them to grow that lung?
Well, they said two, didn't they?
Yeah. So what's to stop them from extracting one of your lungs, leaving you short of breath for a few months, using your own damn lung to make the scaffolding, restarting the process to grow it fresh, and then reimplanting it?
Get a ton of money. That's what's stopping them.
That's a fair answer.
Well, dude, this shit is awesome, but it ain't cheap. If you look at how many people have to be employed, plus the development of the tech. I mean, to upscale this to where it would be a point where I could pretty much abuse my body like I have been for the last 42 years and then go in for a maintenance fucking tune-up for a year.
Scrub down and regrow?
It's deeper than you think, dude. The first pill costs $1 million. Everything else is like 10 cents.
I love that. So what are you doing this week? I'm booked in for a scrub down and a regrow. Like, just get it fucking...
What they would do when it comes to lungs, mammal lungs are pretty much the same shape. So they're going to find a large enough mammal to support a human lung. They're going to stick a swab down your throat, do a wipe so they get your actual genetic material, bleach out whatever animal lung, and then coat it in your genetic material and grow you a lung. That's the way they would do it for commercial use.
Then they just come in and do a swap.
Yep, they would do pig and cow lungs because we're already farming them, and we've genetically engineered pigs to grow human organs already.
And you think if we can get invasive surgery down to a point where we can take out and put back in a lung? Yeah, man, you could go in on a Monday, come out on a Tuesday.
Well, that's where you get the surgical robots in there, right? You program them enough to recognize the marker points of what they needed to do to not murder you, and that way you could just automate the fuck out of it, right?
Dude, in a perfect world, yeah, and I don't think I'm going to live long enough to get there.
I want doctor-assisted robot surgery.
Yeah, there you go.
The
that's
robot
a good
can be
that's,
there, but
that's...
I want a human doctor there.
You know what? I work in technology. I know how this shit works. That's a good call.
Yeah, the robot might be doing the fine motor shit, but I want a human there saying, oh, God, the robot just hit a rail it wasn't supposed to hit. Pause. Reset the print before the man dies.
Wait a minute. Somebody hacked the robot. Why is it putting his head on his crotch?
Oh, God, it's gone from lung surgery to spot weld.
Oh, God.
We should not reuse the CNC machines this way.
Oh, fuck. All right. Last article for tonight is from The Telegraph. and it's pretty dark. We've talked about this stuff before, but this one's just a touch different. Homeless people are wearing barcodes around their necks in an attempt to increase donations in a cashless society under an Oxford University-backed initiative. A new social innovation project called Greater Change hands homeless people a QR code, similar to the kind issued for online tickets. Passerbys who wish to give money but who may not have any change in their pocket can scan the code using their smartphone and make an online payment to the person. The donation goes into an account, which is managed by a caseworker who ensures that the money is spent on agreed targets, such as saving for a rental deposit or a new passport. Wait, new passport? That's a jump. Rental deposit or a new passport.
Get out of the country, homeless.
Yeah. The problem we're trying to solve here is that we live in an increasingly cashless society, as well as this is when people are... When people give, they worry about this what this money might be spent on. Alex McCullen, founder of Greater Change, told the BBC. So the solution we've come up with is to give a giving mechanism through which your smartphone can, with a restrictive fund. When you scan the barcode on your smartphone, a profile of the homeless person appears, tells you more about their circumstances, such as how they became homeless or what their job used to be. The project, which is being trialed in Oxford, is supported by Oxford University Innovation and Oxford said business school. Now, Coley, MP of the Labour co-chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Ending Homelessness, said necessity has again become the mother of invention, and now there's an app to try and help generate more public donations to homeless people. Whatever happened to calling it begging? Public donations to homeless people. Well, I mean, if you're really going to go for the PC, shouldn't you be saying public donations to those people experiencing homelessness? I mean, come on.
You'd think with a nation with socialized health care and a safety net for all, there would be no homeless. These people are homeless by choice.
This intervention should not be necessary, but with a government ignoring the scale of the problem, any extra donations may help homeless people directly. He added that homelessness has escalated in recent years, and the app will not help address the broader issues such as the lack of drug and alcohol cessation programs, affordable housing, and mental health care. John Sparkles.
Yes, I love that man's name.
No, it's John Sparks. I'm sorry. I was making sure that was right.
You were right the first time.
All right, John Sparkles, chief executive of Crisis.
You know his nickname, Sparky.
It's encouraging to see that people want to help rough sleepers. Rough sleepers, there's a term.
That's the term in Britain for homeless, yeah.
But the bigger picture here is that there's neither rough sleeping nor any form of homelessness should be an issue in Britain today. The big issue has previously said that Britain's move towards a cashless society is contributing to the declining sales as it trials contactless payments to help the homeless. The magazine, which is sold by homeless people, has suffered as a result of people walking up and down British high streets without coins and notes in their pocket, as they now rely on cards and mobile phones for payment. Russell Blackman, the Big Issues managing director, said earlier this year that they are looking into ways to roll out cashless payments to all its vendors. It's vital that we develop the right contactless solution for our vendors, ensuring that they can get instant access to their funds, even if they don't have their own bank account due to a lack of permanent address, he said. So, the part about this... I mean, homeless people have been wearing the QR codes for, like, Bitcoin addresses and shit like that for a while in a couple of different areas. The thing about this that bothered me was that in this particular system... You're not giving them $5. You're giving an account, which this Oxford program is managing for them, $5. And then they will decide what this person is going to spend their money on, meaning that this person loses all autonomy with their finances. Now, granted, they're homeless, so maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. But I don't know. Something about that bothers me. It's like, No, if I want to give Buddy $5, I should be able to give him $5. And if he wants to go blow it on smokes or something, that's up to him.
Yeah, he's kind of homeless. I'm not going to fault him for having a vice if it's coping with I don't have a house.
I think the big picture here is that this is a government-sponsored program. There technically should be no homelessness in Britain because they have a public housing standard. If you follow me. The state will give you a house if you don't have a house. It won't be your choice in house, and it may not be in the area you desire to live in, but it'll be four walls and a roof. You'll have an indoor toilet. They won't don't have to furnish it for you, but you can live there. And it's basically rent-free. It's called a social safety net. The UK has it. Tagging and bagging and fucking registering you're homeless is just an easy way to move them on from an area when they gather too much.
Well, I mean, and what was, you know, the second example for what they should spend the money in these accounts on is a passport. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, to get the fuck out of the UK. To get out of the UK. They don't want them in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the picture that they show of the dude holding up the QR code is just dark. Because, I mean, I don't know if that's an actor or not, but that certainly looks like somebody who's, you know... And then they've got the picture of his profile. It's the same guy, but I mean, oh my God.
It could be the Oxford guy.
Yeah, it could be.
If you are homeless, you're probably going to have some issues. And I think one of those issues are you're probably a very private person who doesn't like to ask for help. Now to get your money that you fucking begged for, you have to rock up to a dude and go, hey man, can I get... $50, so I want to buy a pack of smokes and some beer. And they'll go, no, you need to, you can only have $10, and I want to see a receipt for food. Like, fuck. Yeah, you know how I'm not wearing that QR code anymore? That's, I think losing their autonomy, man, is, I have serious fucking problems with this. Really serious problems.
As far as the, they shouldn't have homeless because it's, they have the social safety net. I live in a country not known for its social safety net, but the government will pay for people to own a house. Under Section 8, you can get the government to pay for your mortgage. So, we buy people houses. We still have a homeless problem. And it's because homeless... aren't homeless because there isn't necessarily a program to help the homeless. In most developed countries, homeless are homeless because they have a mental problem and they're not getting treatment. Well, so I don't think it's a treatment problem with providing them an apartment. They need to provide them therapy.
Yeah, you need a stable place to do that therapy. But yes, you're homeless by choice at the end of the day.
It's dark, man. I mean, something about that is just really fucking dark.
Yeah, but it's meant to be an upbeat charity story. Look how 20th century into the future we are with our begging now. No, this is some creepy, creepy fucking shit. You're tagging humans, and you know where they're roaming. These are not cats.
Well, I mean, yeah, because every time somebody processes a payment for you, that you think it's not tagging the location to make sure that they're not in their prescribed zone.
Hey, what's to say the cameras on the phone isn't taking a picture of the homeless?
Yeah, I mean, because
what condition they're in?
It looked like you had to install an app.
Yeah, it could be taking a picture of them, see what condition they're in. You know, things like that.
I don't know if they're doing prescribed zones. That might be pushing it a bit. We can be freaky with them just controlling their money. don't need to go super hyperbolic here.
Oh, you never know, Madman. They could be like, right, anybody donating in this area because we're having a high T function for the Queen, if you're around that area, your QR code payment won't go through.
Yeah, it'll go to our fund, not yours.
Yeah, you know what I mean? How long before they start moving the homeless around like that? Okay, today you'll only get paid in borough 15, and they send all the homeless down to one section.
Oh, geez, that'd be a way to have a quick political mob, wouldn't it?
It's some dark shit, dude.
Oh, no. How would the homeless person have any accounting for how much money was actually given to them?
There you go.
They have no receipt. It's not like they're handling the cash. So they could be, I mean, because you see that story all the time. How much, Madman, you'll remember this. How much money did John Stossel make begging an hour?
$19 an hour.
So, okay, $19 an hour. Let's say they spend 10 hours a day doing it, and we'll just round up nicely. So $200, well, euros, so 150 euros. I'm just rough numbers. They get there at the end of the day. How do you know this poor organization is not going to say, okay, yep, you've got access to $50?
Yeah.
Don't.
Well, it's no secret that I lived rough for 6 months. And with the three homeless dudes called Frank, Dez, and Dez, they taught me how to beg. Those motherfuckers were rolling in it. I'm fucking serious. They were drunks, though. But, man, they knew how to make money.
Oh, sure. You see them all over the place around here. And if you watch them for long enough, they'll go get in their car. I mean, it's like...
God damn it. Homeless people with cars. Heckly, yeah. Are you homeless at that point?
I believe they're called mobile homes at that point.
Yeah.
That was kind of bad.
Anyway.
Let's do this. All right. Got two things for us tonight in Digital Dojo. The first, I think, is really cool, but I'm probably going to have to explain it a bit. It's a GitHub repository with a Linux audit D rule set mapped to the MITRE ATT&CK framework. Madman, you know what that is, right?
Nope. got the GitHub part, and I'm like, framework, I know what that is, but I don't know what MITRE does. So now that I know what a framework is, since I don't know what the framework is for, I effectively don't know what the framework is.
So the MITRE ATT&CK framework, and that's MITRE, is, I forget the company that does it, but they have gone through and mapped all of the kind of a generic level of cyber attack to categories and common ways of preventing them and what they fall under. And you end up with this really nice framework of, okay, here's this. How do we defend against this? Here's this. How do we defend against this? And so on and so forth, right? So it's an interesting way of auditing your platform and seeing what you're vulnerable to. It's like, okay, you find an attack to represent every category of the framework, and then you go see if you can defend against that. That kind of thing, right?
Oh, it's like this framework is vulnerable to man-in-the-middle attack. Can we defend against the man-in-the-middle attack?
It's a framework for establishing that kind of stuff. Now, Linux Audit D is a package that's part of the kernel that you can enable for tracking and, in some cases, preventing pretty much any action on the file system. So with Audit D, if you want a log entry every time a user makes a file on the disk or a process makes a file on a disk, this will do it. If you want a log entry every time somebody reads files in a particular folder, Audit D will do it. So if you're trying to really lock down a Linux system, this is a key component of it. So this is a set of rules for Audit D. Now, it's not complete, but mapped to at least portions of the MITRE ATT&CK framework. Now, obviously, with Audit D being as invasive as it is, you're not just going to go drop this on your servers and hope for the best, right? But as a baseline, place to start, fantastic work. So you can, it's a good way to start hardening a Linux system. It's a good starting point.
Cool.
And then for the second thing we have tonight, this is a little bit goofier, but it is still hilarious. It is a Python script called Credover. And this guy, I'm really wishing Syntax or somebody was here tonight, because he'd be going nuts over this. This is a script demonstrating the dangers of credential reuse. Pretty much, you give it a username and a password, and it goes out and tries to use that username and password against just a whole smattering of websites and locations.
I just got into your Facebook. I just got into your Twitter. I just got into your Netflix. Oh, and here's your checking account at three different banks.
So right now, I'm pretty sure. So it looks like right now it does 14 different websites. And that would be Facebook, Twitter, AskFM, GitHub, VirusTotal, eBay, Wikipedia, AirDroid, Stack Overflow, Foursquare, GitLab, Google, Yahoo, and MediaFire. So you know, if you happen to find a set of credentials, you can feed them into this script. And, oh, it also does, it goes out and checks the email address against Have I Been Pwned. So, yeah, it'll even, you know, you might even be able to just punch in an email address, have it go pull the passwords from Have I Been Pwned and start testing them. It's a demonstration of why credential reuse is a bad idea. But,
my Saturday's gone.
I think it's cool. And he's got some ASCII art. And he may or may not have realized that he had the Joker set as his wallpaper showing through his transparent terminal when he was taking his screenshots. But, yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's Python. So, you know, you can certainly expand this out if you want to add more websites to it and stuff like that.
Cool.
But anyways, I thought it was cool. That's all I've really got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site. The subreddit are probably the best ways to get a hold of us in the IRC tonight. Looks like we had Psychros and Iron Angel outside of myself, Sardonyx, and Madman. And, yeah, Madman, closing thoughts.
Ooh. Can we tattoo an ER code on Alex Jones to keep track of him now that I can't find him on YouTube?
A QR code tattoo?
I mean,
yeah.
He's not quite homeless yet, but the shirtless vitamin salesman might go homeless if he can't sell anything.
Do you honestly think Alex Jones would hold still long enough to get tattooed with a QR code? Yeah, no, dude, it'll be
on how hammered we got him.
It'll be a sweet dragon across your chest. Don't worry about it. That doesn't look like a dragon. Yeah, it'll be a dragon. Don't worry about it.
The tattoo guy was kind of stoned. Don't worry. It's becoming more dragon-ish the longer you sit here.
All right, are you closing right. thoughts?
I'm just going to continue on that with you. I'm pretty sure Alex Jones has fuck you money, man. I don't think he's hurting. We're not going to have to tag him as one of the homeless to give him money.
I'm sure there's several people out there who would like to tag him, though.
But Alex is at least two people on this show. If you want some extra stuff for InfoWars, man, we're available.
My God, we actually
I'd work for InfoWars.
We actually fucking could, couldn't we?
I get enough hours to work for InfoWars, and I'm good at research.
And we've all got experience doing audio.
And I've good research experience. Very good research.
His back's crippled up, Alex. He cannot get out of the chair. Give the man a job. He's literally got nothing better to do.
That's how the dude from Prison Planet got hooked up with InfoWars.
So, anyways, that's all I got.
Joe Rogan Morps would like to be on your show.
God.
You can do 3 hours with Joe. He's stoned.
What happened to Joe Rogan? He hung himself.
Depression.
Well, I mean, we did used to claim this was the most depressing news show on the internet, so that's not true anymore, but hey, whatever. Oh, fuck.
All right. That's fuck it. Off Mopes' lawn.
All right.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.